Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, broadcasting from central London every week at this time. And it's the big conversation. It's the great debate. Thank you for those who missed me last week. I certainly missed you. And there's plenty to talk about this evening. There's chaos outside the BBC, just down the road from here, as thousands gather to protest at the BBC giving over a chair in its flagship programme, Question Time, to the leader of the far-right, anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant party, the BNP. And there's chaos and carnage in Pakistan. The spillover of the Afghan war into Pakistan looks now to be spilling over into neighbouring countries too. We'll be asking in the second half of the show whether the Pakistani government is doing enough and is doing the right things in order to bring the situation under control. And can it control its borders in and out? And we'll be looking again at the survey on the Afghan war. Remember, we asked you a couple of weeks ago whether you thought the war was making you feel more secure. Not many did, I can tell you. Our telephone number is 4478-0008066. Our SMS number, 4420860145555. Or you can email us at comment@presstv.co.uk. And remember that next week, thanks to the changing of the clocks, our program starts an hour earlier. That's an hour earlier next Thursday. Make a date. Make a point in your diary because you won't want to miss it. Let's take our first telephone call of the evening. Yes, hello, caller. Hello.
Hello, yes.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Cambridge.
You're very welcome. Go ahead, please.
Nice to hear you again.
Nice to hear you.
Yeah. Now, you're speaking about the situation in Pakistan.
Yes.
Yes, but the thing is, what a lot of the folks on the ground don't seem to recognize is that the government of Pakistan is taking money from the American government to kill their own people and have them move from place to place under the assumption of this terrorism thing that they have going on, which is what they call the war on terror. And the Americans is bribing the Pakistani government. They take the money, but the poor people on the ground don't get any of it.
Well, that's last point is certainly true. The Pakistani masses are in a terrible state. Their economic and social position disastrous. Their levels of literacy and public health amongst the very poorest in the world. Pakistan has for more than half of its existence been governed by military dictatorships, and for the rest of the time has lived under the shadow of the next military dictatorship waiting to happen. Those dictators have taken billions and billions of dollars and certainly not distributed them to the poor masses of Pakistan. However, to describe the situation in Pakistan as an assumption of terrorism means that you haven't been paying enough attention to the news. The existence of terrorism inside Pakistan is well tried and tested, I can assure you. And some horrific crimes have been committed in mosques, in the army headquarters in Rawalpindi, in public squares, in marketplaces, in the Peshawar in the northwest, in Lahore, in Islamabad, in Karachi. Many, many acts of terrorism have taken place. Nobody can blame the government of Pakistan in trying to stop terrorism inside its own territory. But as you say, it's the unholy alliance with the United States made by the previous military dictator Musharraf that's the cause of this particular round of problems. Let's take another telephone call. Yes, caller? Hello? Yes, caller? Yes, where are you?
Okay, I'm from Nigeria. My name is Tijani from Yola, Nigeria. Please, I want to ask, is Israel above the law? And if not, why did the United Nations never punish Israel for any crime committed? And again, I want to know, why does the West regard Hamas as a terrorist instead of Israel? Israel is killing innocent people, entering Gaza, demolition homes, and they kill few of Hamas. They say they want to make Israel safe by killing innocent civilians in Palestine. And also, do you believe that the West is sincere and committed to the peace deal because Israel is expanding its occupation up till now and nothing has been done, and it is also building the blockage between the Palestinians? And if Israel is having nuclear warhead and nothing has been done, and they are not even talking about it, and nothing has been done, and nothing seems to be done. Why?
Well, thank you for that, an unusually clear and politically very clear too call from Nigeria, and I agreed with almost all of it. I do believe that the peace talks that the Americans have been trying to broker are due to begin shortly. I don't believe that they will lead to any successful conclusion, because Israel is not prepared to allow any kind of Palestinian state worthy of the name to emerge from those talks. The Israelis want a never-ending process, but no peace, because peace can only be paid for by justice. That's true. And the idea that Hamas, the elected government in Palestine, is the source of the problem in the country is simply ridiculous. I was in Damascus last week. I met with leaders of all the political fronts in the Palestine national movement there, and they're all determined to resist the occupation of their country, but they're all ready for peace. They would all like to see a peace, but the price of peace is justice. Let's take another call. Hello, caller. Yes. Hello. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Judy. Just wanted to touch on this BNP thing. This BNP Grandmaster coming on to the BBC Question Time. How did that happen? I was just wondering, what next? Would the EDL and the KKK show up soon? Because I know you hardly ever get an invite. And also, just to jump off the topic, you mentioned Pakistan a few moments back. I just wanted to know what would come of Musharraf, and has England become a safe haven for terrorists like himself?
Well, I was just about to make the point to you, Ahmed, that the General Musharraf is living in London and being paid for by your taxes. All his protection and movements are being paid for by the British taxpayer. I'm not sure what we did to deserve General Musharraf. But the BNP row is a very serious one. There's a big problem down at the BBC this evening. There are thousands of people demonstrating against this preacher of hate being given this platform to talk to perhaps 4 million British people and many millions more, and the news coverage that there will be of it. I wish that the BBC had not invited Nick Griffin onto the show, because of course his rights to free speech have to be balanced against the rights of millions of minority ethnic populations in Britain not to suffer racial and religious hatred. And he uses his rights of free speech in order to generate race and religious hatred. And that ends up not in words, but in fists and boots and bottles, and sometimes in murder. So they should never have invited him on. But now that he's on, it's better that he's opposed by someone able to deal with him. That would have been me. But I couldn't have done so, because the demonstrators outside would not have understood it. It's time now to change our policy. If these people are going to be on television, let's field our first 11, our best team, in order to expose them for what they are. Thank you very much. Let's take another one. Hello, caller.
Hello, Farah. My name is Saeed. I'm calling from London.
Welcome.
I actually I'm from Afghanistan. A lot of time I watching on TV, you know, about the election, about the Western. Better any plan, they went to Afghanistan. Right now, they bring us democracy, which is we don't know anything about the democracy. But I don't know. They are there to help us or make fun of us.
Well, the idea that what we have in Afghanistan is democracy is, of course, laughable. In fact, we're asked to be grateful to the president for agreeing to run a second election round after he's been caught by the international observers fraudulently benefiting from one-third fraudulent votes. That means that one in three of his votes, at least one in three of his votes, was fake, was a fraud, was filled in by other people and stuffed into ballot boxes. And my guess is there were a lot more where that one-third came from. And yet we're supposed to be grateful to Karzai that he's agreed to stand in a second round. I tell you this, Karzai is not worth the bones of a single British grenadier, nor a single American soldier, or Canadian soldier, or Italian soldier. Karzai is a corrupt warlord, and our young men should not be giving their life's blood in order to keep him in power. That's my point of view. What's yours? Let's take another call. Hello, caller.
Hi, good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening, sir. Go ahead.
Mr. Galloway, actually, I can talk together with you if I want next 10 days, next 10 years. Well, I know it's not enough time for me to talk. But what I was going to pass information regarding a couple of things, if you give me a chance, I will be really grateful. One thing is, whatever this couple of days before, actually, well, before I'm speaking, actually, I wanted to say I'm calling from Scotland. My name is Ismail. Actually, I'm from Turkey.
Okay.
So the comments is, a couple of days before the bomb went off in an area called in Balochistan in Iran, which is the one of the important National Guard people who were get killed over there because they were attending some really important meeting between Sunni and the Shia, which is that has been basically some organization, Jindullah, has exposed everything. Why they're doing this, calling themselves Jindullah, claiming they're a Muslim and then killing Muslim brothers, doesn't matter if they're Shia or Sunni. We are all human beings at the end of the day. And this, as far as I'm concerned, if the people look deep down, this is all secret agents' game, and people, our area, is no clever enough to understand that, but hopefully the government of Iran and the older regions will understand that and do something about this.
Well, thank you. That's an important issue that you raise. More than 40 people were slain in that dastardly bombing, and many scores of others were grievously injured. Some of those who were killed were important leaders in the Revolutionary Guard, and it's obviously a dramatic escalation of violence in that area, and I'm sure that the government of Iran intends to deal with that very firmly. As to who's responsible, I don't myself know, and I don't know if the investigations are yet complete. But the possibility of foreign hands in stimulating, perhaps arming and financing the elements who did this is a very real possibility. There's no doubt that Iran is being subjected to the full gamut of subversion from propaganda to armed propaganda. And on the principle, if it can be called one, of my enemy's enemy is my friend, it's perfectly possible that Western powers, or indeed for that matter Israel, would be prepared to assist Sunni extremists to blow up Shiites in Iran in order to destabilize the political situation in that part of Iran and to accentuate this division between Sunni and Shia, which some forces are determined to enlarge and make better for the empire to exploit and steal the wealth of the people, the Muslims, both Sunni and Shiite. Divide and rule is their tactic. It always has been. Don't fall for it. Let's take another call. Hello, caller.
Hello there, Mr. Galloway.
Yes, sir.
My name is Ramzan. I'm from South Wales.
Welcome.
How are you? All right, sir.
Good, thanks.
Good. There are two points I'd like to make, Mr. Galloway. Regarding Pakistan. Sorry. Okay. Well, basically, what it is, the Wahhabism, right, we got 9,000 madrasas in Pakistan. My severe, right, what I've done is there's about 50 to 65% of the Wahhabi madrasas run by Saudi Arabia. 8 years ago, they funded, right, $3 billion promoting Wahhabism, right? Only God knows how much they're promoting now to promote Wahhabism all over the world, right? If you look at it, right, most of these terrorists are from the Wahhabi background. Right? And basically that is the reason till we close their madrasas in Pakistan, we are not going to get any peace, Mr. Galloway. My other point was, I'm being very brief and short to the points, right? The other point is regarding America, Israel, they only want to control Pakistan because of the nuclear bomb, right? That's all it is. They don't care about Afghanistan or how many people they kill, right? That is their mission behind. They want to have a base. They got a base in Afghanistan. No, basically all they are trying to do is stir trouble in Pakistan so they can say to our people and the rest of the world, oh, Pakistan government is not stable, right? So therefore, we must control their nuclear bomb.
Well, the logical flaw in that, of course, is that Pakistan was allowed to acquire a nuclear bomb out with the non-proliferation treaty. It was not only allowed, its regime, its dictatorship was rewarded for acquiring a nuclear bomb, given endless amounts of military and financial aid, as I was discussing earlier. So if they didn't want Pakistan to have a nuclear bomb, they could have easily stopped Pakistan from having a nuclear bomb. After all, look what they're doing with Iran, which isn't trying to get a nuclear bomb. And the reason that there are thousands of madrasas in Pakistan is because there are virtually no schools. At least there are not nearly enough schools for the population. That's why Pakistan has a level of illiteracy, which is an absolute disgrace for a country of such intelligent and cultured people as Pakistanis. It's a disgrace that people are relying on these madrasas. And I don't believe that you can blame the government of Saudi Arabia for every ill in the world. There's undoubtedly homegrown extremism in Pakistan, and the government of Pakistan has to deal with it. One caller earlier said it was an assumption. It's not an assumption. There are hundreds, thousands of people being slain in bombings, nihilistic, terroristic bombings of ordinary, innocent people going about their daily lives in Pakistan. And no government, whether a dictatorship or a democratically elected one, could possibly allow that to continue. The question is, is what Pakistan's doing making matters worse? I'm sure we'll discuss that later in the show. Let's take another call. Hello, caller. Ah, we're going to the cartoons up on the comment wall. We've got so many calls coming in. I thought we were going back to the phone lines. This from Carlos Latouf, our Brazilian wizard. He's at latouf2deviantart.com. This is Muntadar Al-Zaidi with his famous shoe, done up as Rambo, absolutely brilliant. And of course there are reports that Mr. Al-Zaidi is very gravely ill. I don't know the truth of those reports, but if he became very ill whilst in the custody of the government of Iraq, that would be a very serious matter indeed. And this from Peter Brooks, one of my favourite cartoonists in the Times, timesonline.co.uk. This one is absolutely brilliant. This is President Karzai adrift in a hot air balloon, rather like that bogus one in the United States last week, with President Obama holding on grimly and perhaps being flown to destruction by the whole Afghan affair. That's absolutely brilliant. Vote Karzai. If you don't, he'll vote for himself several million times. Martin Rosen, another great cartoonist in The Guardian at guardian.co.uk. This one, the Dove of Peace with the olive branch in its beak, with the President Obama riding its back, hoping to take off, fingers crossed, hope, rhetoric, but alas, the dove is anchored in rocks, heavy, heavy weights of Afghanistan and everywhere else, unable to get off the ground. That's a pretty brutal but brutally frank depiction of the situation. Now, you remember we had a survey on whether the audience thought that the war in Afghanistan was making them feel more safe. There was the question, has the threat been reduced? Has the threat increased? Or don't you know? Let's see what the final polling results were. We had a terrific response to this by viewers from all over the world. We'll give you the figures at the end, so you've still got time to vote. Don't forget the phone lines, SMS and email. Let's go to the phone lines now and take another caller. Yes, caller.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm Hussein.
Go ahead.
I'm calling from Saudi.
Very welcome, sir.
How are you, George?
Very good, thank you very much. I was very ill last week, but I'm, by the grace of God, I'm back on my feet.
Inshallah, God gives you good, good health, inshallah.
Thank you,
George.
So much.
George, there's something I don't understand with this international community. They go and colonize people, and they want to impose their own thinking in the name of freedom and democracy. or should I say freedom and democracy, George?
Very good.
And
very
then
good.
And then these people, they talk about terrorists. I don't know. George, I don't understand the meaning of terror. I don't understand the meaning of democracy. And Israel has been bombarding Gaza for 22 good days, George,
yes,
committing war crimes and crimes of humanity, George. And yet we have people just who have, I think you people in London, in England, or in the Western world, you have good lawyers, good politicians, good human rights advocates, good all everything. And what is going on, George? Could you please comment on that? What is going on?
Well, Israel is getting everything that it wants. It got the destruction and the breakup of Iraq, and it's determined to try and do the same with Iran. And the so-called international community is no doubt mulling over what to do next on the Iranian track. But Israel has committed more crimes against the international law than all the other countries in the world put together. And yet she's not punished, she's endlessly rewarded. And democracy, of course, is a wonderful thing. It doesn't stop our country being the best of friends with your country, Saudi Arabia, where there's no democracy or freedom of any kind. It's a shamocracy that the Western powers believe in. And free doom, I like that one. That's very good. Let's take another call. See where this one's from. Hello.
Good evening, Josh. I'm Musa from Slough.
Very nice to hear from you, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. Is it not time for the West to realize that they cannot succeed in Afghanistan? The Soviet didn't succeed. Why they can't leave there alone to sort them out by themselves?
Well, that's what they're going to have to do in the end, because no one's going to win a war in Afghanistan. Never has been done. Well, thanks very much for that. The Afghans are indeed going to have to resolve their own problems. And they're going to have to do it with the help of their neighbors, because their neighbors are the most vitally affected. We have to protect our right to be defended against any kind of terrorism emanating from Afghanistan against us, against our people, against our legitimate interests. But that's the only right we have vis-a-vis Afghanistan. It's not our business who the president is, and I certainly would never sacrifice my son to ensure the re-election of Hamid Karzai. Would you? Would Tony Blair? I bet he wouldn't. Let's go to the comment wall. Take our first email of the evening. This one from Timothy in Belgium. Is there a good Taliban? I know that the Karzai was a Taliban commander back in the day, before he became good. I'm also hearing many British, American and European military generals saying they should make a deal with the Taliban. Yeah, that's the point I was just making, Timothy. They're going to have to declare these Taliban as being good, and they're going to have to sit down and negotiate with them. Everybody knows that. It's going to happen sooner or later. So better that it happens sooner, before other people's sons have to give their lives, and before many more thousands of Afghans lose their lives and their homes and their livelihoods. Another British and another American soldier were killed this evening, just before I came on the air. That's happening every day and will continue to happen every day. So my plan is this. Let's have a peace conference here in London. Let's invite all the political forces in Afghanistan, and let's bring all their neighbors to London, and let's work out a deal. You know, it makes sense. Let's take another email on the comment wall. Let's try and squeeze this one in before the break. It's from Gaza, from Jabalia. Yassin, Tony Blair was shouted at in the Ibrahim Mosque in Hebron. Tony Blair still supports Israel against Palestine, Lebanon, Iran, and others. Bush had shoes thrown at him in Iraq. These are protests of the majority. The days when people just sit and take it is over. Brilliant, Yassin, and greetings to all my friends in Jabalia. Now, we've actually got some brilliant film of exactly what happened in the Ibrahimi Mosque. And we'll recap what happened to George Bush at the hands of the shoes of al-Zaidi. It's a very important reckoning that both these war criminals had to face in Palestine and Iraq. Hopefully one day they'll face it in The Hague in the War Crimes Tribunal. I'll be back after the news with the second half of Comment here on Press TV. I promise you, you won't want to miss it. So come back and see me after the news. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, each and every week. And next week, it's 1 hour earlier, so please make a note of that. We don't want you missing the show. 1 hour earlier next week because the clocks have gone back. Phone number 4478-0008066. We'll even call you back to get a clear line. SMS me on 4420860145555. And you can email me, of course, at comment@presstv.co.uk. In the second half of the show, we're going to concentrate on Pakistan. I have a very long association with Pakistan. I hold the two highest civil awards that the country bestows, the Hilali Qaidi Azam and the Hilali Pakistan. The first for my work in the restoration of democracy in the 1980s in Pakistan. The second for my work in support of the people of occupied Kashmir. So I do know what I'm talking about when I say that Pakistan's problem has been the relationship, its very special relationship between its armed forces and the United States of America. And that's still the primary problem today. Because of the American role in Afghanistan, not just now, but going back to the 1980s, Pakistan has been landed deep in trouble because of US policy towards Afghanistan. And the people of Pakistan are the people who've paid the secondary price for it, as indeed they're doing now. They're paying the price in terrorism, and they're paying the price in American drone attacks across the border, and their country is in danger of falling apart. So, let's discuss it. You can call me, you can email me, or you can SMS me, talking about Pakistan and, of course, the attendant issue of Afghanistan, where the problem has been President Karzai's government's total lack of legitimacy. Let's see what we've got on the comment wall and see what we've got in the telephone lines. Go ahead, caller. Yes.
Hello, Mr. Galloway. How are you?
I'm very well. Good of you to call.
Thanks. Yeah, I was interested to hear that you met with Hamas leaders in Damascus recently.
Yes, I bet you were.
Yeah, I've never been to Damascus, but I've been to the West Bank in Israel. And when I was in Israel, I took buses and sat in restaurants and coffee shops which had actually been blown up by Hamas. Mm. So I just wonder why you support Hamas, which is a violent organization which has murdered Jewish civilians in Israel.
Well, I wonder if you'd ever been in a coffee shop in Gaza that had been blown up by the Israeli armed forces.
Yeah, you didn't answer my question. I wouldn't support blowing up coffee
shops.
No,
I will answer your question, but I just wondered what your view was about the 1,416 Palestinians, overwhelmingly women and children, civilians, who were blown up in coffee shops and schools and hospitals and even in their own beds just a year ago. Did you care about that?
Yeah, I don't like to see civilians harmed.
No, I know you don't like to see it, but did you support it?
You like Hamas and you support them.
No, well, I'm going to answer your question. I just wondered if you wanted to take the opportunity of answering mine. What your attitude was to the Israeli army's attack on Gaza just less than 12 months ago.
Question, George. Why do you support...
You're obviously not going to answer it, so I'll answer you. First of all, I said that when I was in Damascus, I met with the leaders of all the Palestinian factions because I have an interest in the unity of the Palestinian people, and I want to help bring about national unity amongst the Palestinians. I know that you want the Palestinians to stay disunited, the better to rule them, but I'm on the opposite side of this argument from you. I'm not a supporter of Hamas. I have never been a supporter of Hamas, and I don't expect to be a supporter of Hamas in the future. I have supported President Arafat's Fatah faction all of my life, since I was 21 years old. And my choice for President of Palestine is not the leader of Hamas, but the Marwan Barghouti, the political prisoner held in an Israeli dungeon. Believe me, you'd be doing everyone a favor if you applied some pressure to try and get him out of prison, because he could make a big difference to the possibility of bringing about a solution to this. I'm against blowing up coffee shops and civilian people, whether in Gaza or in Tel Aviv, or in the West Bank, or in Afghanistan, or in Baghdad, or in London. I'm against it all the time, always. But I'm different from you in this respect. I don't have a double standard on this. I condemn blowing up civilians in Tel Aviv, but I expect others to condemn the blowing up of civilians in Gaza. The problem is the supporters of Israel very rarely do. They make excuses, you see. They say there were terrorists hiding behind the coffee shop, or there was a terrorist in the coffee shop. The fact that everybody in the coffee shop had to die in order to get the terrorists, well, that's just collateral damage. Do you see my point, caller?
Thanks for your thorough reply, Mr. Galloway. But why was it that you actually met with the Hamas leader in Damascus and also in Gaza, Ismail Haniyeh? You gave them money, I believe, in Gaza.
Well, you believe wrongly. I never gave Ismail Haniyeh any money. But he gave me a passport, of which I'm very proud. I met him because he's the elected Prime Minister of Palestine. You may not like that. I myself would not have voted for him. But he is the elected Prime Minister of Palestine. And the one thing that's guaranteed to be a failure is the attempt to choose other people's leaders for them. It didn't work for us in Ireland, and it will not work for supporters of Israel in Palestine. I don't support Hamas, but I do support democracy. And that means recognizing the people that the people who are in this situation actually elected. It's called democracy, my friend. We have to live with it here in Britain, and I'm afraid you have to live with it in Palestine too. Let's take another caller. Yes, hello, caller.
Hello, George.
Yes.
Well, I think Michael, hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I think Michael, just before, was very young. He doesn't know much about the world. Tippi Libani's father was a terrorist. Israel was born out of terrorism. Hamas was democratically elected in January 2006. And since then, America and Israel have gone out of the way not to have peace, not to get any dialogue. So it's them that's still causing all this horrible violence and bloodshed. And besides, they're now hell-bent on wanting to attack Iran. They're very evil, these people. I'm very frightened for my children's my grandchildren's future. And tonight on BBC, I'm absolutely disgusted. I've just been on a demonstration outside the BBC radio station here in Liverpool that the BBC are allowing a very vile man on, Nick Griffin, the leader of a very vast party. But I think it's all been planned, George, to divert people's attention off what's going on in the Middle East. You're an expert on it, and you're quite right. They're trying to destabilise the whole... Seymour Hersh is a very distinguished journalist in America, and he said for years now the CIA have been fomenting trouble in Iran, and they're trying to cause all this trouble, and it's absolutely horrifying. So when you're looking for terrorists, look for the real terrorists. Tony Blair is a war criminal, and you quite rightly said earlier, his sons haven't been sent over there. He doesn't care about the lads coming back in coffins and all the children that's been slaughtered there in the Gaza. They've got them in a concentration camp. So young Michael, if you're still listening, please read your history and listen to George. We need dialogue. We need peace. We don't need any more war. But Israel and America are going to destroy the world.
What a marvelous call from up there in Liverpool. And I hope that Michael was still listening. He probably is, because supporters of Israel listen avidly to this show, and they follow me on the radio, and they're always looking for some chink, as it were, in my position on this, but they won't find one because it's been consistent for more than 30 years. In fact, getting on for 35 years, I've taken exactly the same line and had exactly the same allegiances. They would be far better putting in their time to put pressure on Israel to come to terms with the fact that this conflict will never end unless there is justice for the Palestinian people. And as long as there's injustice, there will be friends like me and like the caller from Liverpool who've just been on, who will stand beside the victims of the injustice. It's really as simple as that. Let's take another call. Hello, caller. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. Hello. Where are you calling from?
My name is Frank Skor. I'm calling from Harare in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe, welcome.
Yes, I would like to say that the problem that we are having in the world is that the United Nations is taking long to intervene in conflict zones such as Afghanistan and Pakistan. So for as long as we continue to see the United Nations are not taking a proactive role in terms of resolving these disputes, we are going to continue seeing more blood being, spilled. And surely that cannot be allowed in any country that's supposed to be a democracy. And if you have to take, for example, the situation in Zimbabwe, where the government of national unity is about to collapse, you know, you would require regional bodies such as SADC, the African Union, even the United Nations, to take a more proactive role other than, employing what they call quiet diplomacy, like what the former president of South Africa, Mr. Thabo Mbeki, used to say when he was saying there is no crisis in Zimbabwe. Yet people were dying, people were suffering, especially the...
Well, look, just for time reasons, I'm going to have to stop you there, but I'm very glad to get a call from Zimbabwe, albeit the quality of the line was not that clear, but the quality of the argument was. And Zimbabwe is a very good example. We had an apparently insoluble dichotomy between President Mugabe and Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader of the NDC. Now we have a government of national unity. So far as I can see, it appears to be now working quite well. And that's a perfect example of jaw-jaw being better than war-war. And that's what we need to have in Afghanistan too. But on the point of soldiers and their blood being shed, I can assure you, they don't care about the blood of other people's sons being shed. They will never shed their own son's blood. Neither Bush, nor Blair, nor Brown, nor any of these others would dream of sending their own children to die in these conflicts. They're counting on other mothers' sons to die there. Thanks for that. Let's take another call. Hello, caller. Yes? Hello? Hello, caller.
Can you hear me, George?
Yes, I can. Speak up.
George, just a quick one. It's regarding the BNP. You know the ruling a couple of weeks ago regarding membership?
Yes.
How about this, George, for an idea? Why don't a few hundred thousand of us join up with the BNP membership and disrupt them from within?
Well, I know that argument, that 100,000 people join the BNP and take over. Trust me, it's a big job to get a couple of 100,000 people to join anything. I've been trying all my life to get a couple of 100,000 people to join my particular struggles. It wouldn't work, I don't think. But the fact that the BNP had a whites-only membership policy ought to have made them an illegal party. That membership criterion was actually illegal and ought to have been enough to stop them from being allowed to stand in elections and so on. I don't understand how they got away with that. Let's take another call, will we? We're getting so many tonight. Hello, caller.
Hi, George. This is Mohammed here.
Hello, Mohammed. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I just wanted to say that if there was a condition of war, that any president who desired such a war and was cheerleading such a war, that their children would have to go on the front line, then I think that there'd be a lot less war, invasions and such, and more negotiation and dialogue. That's a test. If you believe in the cause, then you should be willing to send yourself and your son to the front line, and you're never ever going to get these guys to do that. Secondly, I just want to say about the Palestine-Israel situation, they're not serious about peace. If you can't even you're still talking about stupid conditions, about we're going to have these conditions, you know, the right sort of atmosphere after 60 years of occupation. They're not serious. The Muslims and everybody else need to wake up and just, you know, smell the coffee. They're not serious, so don't even bother going down that avenue.
Well, I tend to agree. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, of course. If there were talks and there was a solution produced by those talks, nobody would be happier than me. I've been fighting this cause, as I say, for almost 35 years. But I have no confidence that there will, because I don't believe that either the Israeli government or the Israeli opposition or the vast majority of the Israeli public are ready to pay the price of peace. And the price of peace is justice. It won't be total justice. After 60 years, it's impossible to obtain total justice for all the suffering the Palestinians have had to undergo. But a modicum of justice is a price beyond which I think the Israeli public and their politicians are prepared to go. And therefore, I expect this struggle to continue for many years, many decades, alas, before that. Now, Tony Blair was criticized earlier. We had some film that I saw. I hope that we're getting it now on the screen. It was amazing, the scene. Shame on those Palestinian thugs who cornered the young man who was doing the Viva Palestine. I was glad to hear him shout that. This is Zaidi, of course, pelting George Bush. There's both Bush and Blair facing justice of sorts. It's not a patch on what they're going to have to suffer, I hope, in this world, but if not, in the next. Let's take another telephone call. Hello, caller.
Hello, George. How are you? You're right.
I'm well. Where are you?
Well, I'm ringing from Preston. My name is Abdul Mumin, Preston, Lancashire.
Go ahead. It's a very bad line.
Always nice to see you. Right. I would like to ask you, the Israeli government clearly committed war crimes in Gaza. Right. Can you hear me?
I can't really. I don't think that call's going to work. Let's try and get back to that gentleman and get a clearer line. Remember, the telephone number, the SMS, the email are coming up on the screen throughout the show. We're talking about Pakistan, Afghanistan, the BNP down at the BBC, a couple of miles from here, where all hell has broken loose as thousands of anti-racist protesters are out against Nick Griffin and the BNP. Let's try this call. Hello, caller.
Hello, George. Nice to talk to you again. It's Charles from Oldham.
Welcome, sir. Go ahead.
All right. What I want to talk to you about is about the racist Nick Griffin, and whether you were invited to the show, and if you were, would you go if you was, and have you ever been on that show? Because I'm not up to touching my history.
I've been on Question Time many, many times. The first time, almost 25 years ago, in fact, in 1984, exactly 25 years ago was the first time I was on it, and I'm on it again in a couple of weeks from now. I believe, I don't want to go into details, but I believe that I could well have been on the show against Griffin tonight, but I could not do so, because the anti-racist demonstrators outside simply wouldn't have understood my reasons for going on. But I've called this week in my newspaper columns, two of them, in the Daily Record. You can reach it on the internet, dailyrecord.co.uk. I've argued that the anti-racist movement must now change its policy, because this is a breakthrough for the BNP. They're going to be on television now a lot of the time. And if they're going to be on television, we have to put our best people up against them so that we can expose them. The crew that he's up against tonight on Question Time are pathetic. Jack Straw, not up to the job and deeply compromised himself in any case. And the rest of them, whilst culturally Bonnie Greer might be a fine person, she's not a politician. And the other two politicians on the panel are not up to much either. So my worry is that Griffin does not get the grilling and the exposing that he needs to. Let's take another call. Hello, caller.
George.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm Anna from UK.
Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
I just wanted to refer back to nuclear bombs. Is that all right?
Yes, go ahead.
I remember when America dropped two bombs on Japan, Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And at that time, it killed thousands and injured thousands that suffered for years after. And it was America that did it, and they were called terrorists. life at the time. As you can see, I'm old enough to remember that. And I just wondered if when Obama goes around talking about Iran not having the bomb and that, would it not be possible for someone to show what happened in Japan? Because, you know, it's so long ago now that there are so many people that don't know about it even.
That's a very good point, madam. A very, very good point. I myself have visited Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I have seen the aftermath of the nuclear incineration of hundreds of thousands of people and the total destruction of two cities in an instant. One bomb followed by a second bomb, totally eliminating, annihilating two whole cities. And I've seen the shadows on the pavement of the vaporized human beings that ceased to exist in an instant as a result of these nuclear bombs. I'm against all nuclear weapons, but I've never understood the argument why some countries are allowed to have nuclear weapons and other countries are not. And those who do are allowed to threaten with destruction those who don't. Let's take another call. Hello, caller.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Kassi, how are you doing?
Very well, go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. First of all, I just want to tell you I was a big fan of you in Big Brother.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the second is, I just want a little explanation. How did Western presidents like UK and America choose their enemies and their friends? Because some countries like Iran or Syria or Libya or Venezuela, we've been shown that they are bad presidents, that they don't abuse people, they don't treat their human rights. But some presidents and kings, like King of Saudi Arabia, Egypt, they've been shown like they are the right people, the good people, friend of UK. When they abuse their people and don't, in like Saudi Arabia, they don't have any human rights, any votes, and nothing. And in the same time, they're telling they are good people. Is that because of they got oil and their friend with war and terror, and some other countries when like president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, says no to them, to the Western country, don't involve us, leave our business alone. Like Venezuela president, he always talk about leave our business, and Zimbabwe president.
And well, you know, I think the word no was the operative word there. It's because Iran says no, we will not follow orders from the White House or from Downing Street. The days when Iran could be ruled by foreigners is gone. That's the problem. It's not that they're Muslim. There are other Muslim countries who have the closest possible relationship with the West. But as long as they're prepared to be slaves, they can be tolerated. Or Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, who's been elected democratically more times than any leader in the whole world. He's won election after election after election and referendum after referendum. He tried to illegitimize him on the grounds of being a dictator when he's elected. Or the Palestinian election that we talked about, where they simply won't recognize the choice of the Palestinian people in the only fair and democratic election that any Arab country ever had. Let's take another call. Hello, caller.
Hi, George.
Hi, go ahead, sir.
I just wanted to talk to you about the issue that you, the Pakistan issue that
yes,
you have
please.
Currently been discussing.
Yes, go ahead.
Just wanted to, like, basically, all these Afghani, because there's no border control in Pakistan and Afghanistan border. So I personally believe that a lot of people in Afghanistan have come into Pakistan and they call themselves as Pakistanis, and there is terrorism going on in the Northwest Frontier Province. What's your opinion on that?
Well, of course, the line between Pakistan and Afghanistan was unnaturally drawn by the British colonists at the time. The Durand line is a false line dividing the Pashtun people between the NWFP in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and yet another example of a line drawn on a map without any reference to the realities of the tribal and national affinities of the people. But undoubtedly, the movement of people from Afghanistan into Pakistan, which has been going on, by the way, for nearly 30 years, is a major part of this problem. Now, we've had a survey running on whether or not you think the Afghan war has made you feel safer. Let's see what the results are. 5% think that the war has reduced the threat of terrorism. 9% don't know. And a whopping 86% think that we are more in danger of terrorism now as a result of the Afghan war than we were before we started. I hope that you've enjoyed the show this evening, and if you have, I hope you'll come back to the same time, same place, 1 hour earlier next week for comment on Press TV. You can catch me on The Real Deal on Press TV and on TalkSport Radio Fridays and Saturday nights. Until we meet again, God willing, may you go in peace.